We are going to finish the book of Deuteronomy today. It's the last two chapters, 33 and 34.
Deuteronomy 33. This is the blessing with which Moses, the man of God, blessed the people of Israel before his death. He said, "The Lord came from Sinai and dawned from Seir upon us. He shone forth from Mount Paran. He came from the 10,000s of holy ones, with flaming fire at his right hand. Yes, he loved his people. All his holy ones were in his hand. So they followed in your steps, receiving information and direction from you. When Moses commanded us a law as a possession from the assembly of Jacob, thus the Lord became king in Jeshurun. When the heads of the people were gathered, all the tribes of Israel together, let Reuben live and not die, but let his men be few. And this he said of Judah, 'Hear, O Lord, the voice of Yehudah, and bring him into his people. With your hands contend for him, and be a help against his adversaries.' And of Levi he said, 'Give to Levi your Thummim and your Urim, to your godly one, whom you tested at Massah, with whom you quarreled at the waters of Meribah, who said of his father and mother, "I regard them not." He disowned his brothers and ignored his children, for they observed your word and kept your covenant. They shall teach Yaakov your rules and Israel your law. They shall put incense before you and the whole burnt offerings on your altar. Bless, O Lord, his substance, and accept the work of his hands. Crush the loins of his adversaries, of those who hate him, that they rise not again." Of Benjamin he said, "The beloved of the Lord dwells in safety. The high God surrounds him all day long, and dwells between his shoulders." And of Joseph he said, "Blessed by the Lord be his hand and his land, with the choicest gifts of heaven above and of the deep that crouches beneath, with the choicest fruits of the sun and rich yield of the months, with the finest produce of the ancient mountains and the abundance of the everlasting hills, with the best gifts of the earth and its fullness, and the favor of him who dwells in the bush. May these rest on the head of Joseph, on the pate of him who is prince among his brothers. A firstborn bull, he has majesty, and his horns are the horns of a wild ox. With them he shall gore all the peoples, all of them, to the ends of the earth. They are the 10,000s of Ephraim, they are the thousands of Manasseh." And to Zebulun he said, "Rejoice, Zebulun, in your going out, and Issachar, in your tents. They shall call peoples to their mountain. There they offer right sacrifices, for they draw from the abundance of the seas, and the hidden treasures of the sand." And of God he said, "Blessed be he who enlarges God. God crouches like a lion, he tears off arm and scalp. He chose the best of the land for himself, for theirs a commander's portion was reserved. And he came with the heads of the people. With Israel he executed the justice of the Lord and his judgments for Israel." And of Dan he said, "Dan is a lion's cub that leaps from Bashan." And of Naphtali he said, "O Naphtali, sated with favor and full of the blessing of the Lord, possess the lake and in the south." And of Asher he said, "Most blessed of sons be Asher. Let him be the favorite of his brothers, and let him dip his foot in oil. Your bars shall be iron and bronze, and as your days, so shall be your strength. There is none like God, O Yeshurun, who rides upon the heavens to your help, through the skies in his majesty. The eternal God is your dwelling place, and underneath are the everlasting arms. He thrust out the enemy before you and said, destroy. So Israel lived in safety, Yaakov lived alone, and a land of grain and wine, whose heavens dropped down dew. Happy O you, O Israel, who is like you, a people saved by the Lord, the shield of your help, the sword of your triumph. For your enemies shall come fawning to you, and you shall tread upon their backs. Chapter 34. Then Moshe went up to the plains of Moab, to Mount Nebo, to the top of Pisgah, which is opposite Jericho. And the Lord showed him all the land, Gilead as far as Dan, all Naphtali, the land of Ephraim, and Manasseh, all the land of Yehuda, as far as the western sea, the Negrib, the plain, that is, the valley of Jericho, the city of palm trees, as far as Zoar. And the Lord said to him, this is the land of which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, to Yaakov, I will give it to your offspring. I will let you see it with your eyes, but you shall not go over there. So Moses, servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord. And he buried him in the valley in the land of Moab, opposite Beit Peor. But no one knows the place of his burial to this day. Moshe was 120 years old when he died. His eye was undimmed and his vigor unabated. And the people of Israel wept for Moshe in the land in the plains of Moab 30 days. Then the days of weeping and mourning for Moshe were ended. And Joshua the son of Nun was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moshe had laid his hands upon him. So the people of Israel obeyed him and did as the Lord commanded Moshe. And there has not arisen a prophet since in Israel like Moshe, whom the Lord knew face to face. None like him for all the signs and the wonders that the Lord sent him to do in the land of Egypt, to Pharaoh and all the servants and to all his land, and for all the mighty power and all the great deeds of terror that Moshe did in the sight of all Israel.
So what stands out about this chapter? Yes.
So the different blessings that went out to the different tribes?
About Ephraim and Manasseh? Ephraim?
All the way to, Benjamin and...
Oh, yeah, okay.
The different tribes.
Now, we'll talk about each one of those because it's very important to pay a little close attention here. Although, quote, the close, in the writings of Deuteronomy, another author comes on the scene here that was not in the first portions of or in between many of the authors that are within the book of Deuteronomy. In this particular case, he says, now, this is past tense, in its sense. Very first verse, it says, now this is the blessing with which Moses, the man of God, blessed the children of Israel before his death. And the translations have it a little bit differently. Because it's kind of interesting in knowing how the old was. This is the blessing that Moses, the man of God, spoke over the children or the people of Israel before his death. As we go through this, it's very fascinating to see how these words are worded. It's not Moses saying these things. It's Moses explaining things. And these are the pretty well self-explanatory. A lot of them are past tense statements as if it already had occurred at the point of the time of writing of these last two chapters. Moses could not have obviously written the 34th chapter. I mean, it's just impossible for a man to write it about his own death. It's not possible. Well, we'll go through some of these things. As we go through that, we're going to see these blessings that one sees these blessings are what Elohim gave the people. Moses is recording, or this is a recording, the blessings that Moses was telling the heads of Israel, the leaders of Israel and the people, that these are the blessings God has given each and every one of you as a tribe. And when we look at these things, we don't see an awful lot of, quote, cursing, do we? We don't see an awful lot of words spoken out about how bad they were. We don't hear anything negative about it. These are the blessings. Now, when you give a blessing, or God gives a blessing, it's kind of nice to know that it came from Him and not from somebody. And so we read these things, and I've gone on here. It says, and the first thing we hear is that Yahshua came from Sinai and went on Seir and went Mount Paran, and he came to the, it says 10,000. That's not a real good translation, and many of you, it's a word, 10,000 to 1611 meant uncountable. And basically means those who were abundant in number. And he called them of the saints, or of the sanctified ones. And it's kind of interesting that we're looking now at the whole house of, as we're looking at this blessing chapter, and knowing now as we come through this point, and he says that he has loved the people. That was he, Elohim, Yahuwah, loves the people, verse 3, and all his saints are in, and it says, your hands. Now, it's like someone is addressing Yahuwah here, the creator of heaven and earth. And he loves the people. Next statement, all his saints are in your hands. So in Hebrew, it's, when you read so much of this in Hebrew, we kind of look at it as a continuous sentence. It is not. They're individual phrases, individual thoughts, individual statements put together. That's how Hebrew, by the way, is mostly written. There's a statement, and then another statement, and then another statement, and another statement. Daniel went through a pattern of how that chain works. And it's very fascinating to see what we're looking at here is statements that are being made. And this statement here is that, yes, he, has someone's saying here, yes, he loves the people, and all his saints are in your hand. Those sentences don't work together when you try to cram it together. One is a statement, he loves his people. The next statement, like he's talking to God, is saying, and in all his saints are your hands, God. They sit down and my printer is going bad, so I have to read. We're at verse 3 I want to look at here now. And they sit down at your feet. That's what saints do. Okay? They sit down at your feet. At whose feet? Moses' feet? No. This is a blessing. So at whose feet do they sit down at? Well, they sit down at the feet of the Creator of heaven and earth. All of the people of Israel, how did they all sit down at the feet? Well, let's talk about one thing. Verse 4, he says, and Moses commanded a Torah for us. And it's our possession. Jacob owns that Torah. It belongs to them. That's how simplicity it is. Now, verse 5 is a little tricky. It's hard to really kind of clarify a few things. We'll talk about the name in a minute. As we're looking at the blessings, he says, and he, somehow that is capital H, so he, Yahuwah, was king of Jeshurun, or the upright ones. Okay, that's all it means, Melech. He is the Lord, or the overseer, or the king of the upright ones. This word of Yeshurun is only used in Deuteronomy and in Isaiah. The only two places. Now, It's kind of hard to figure out, so I'm not going to explain it to you. All you have to do is make your own decision on how this can be understood in Hebrew. It's, and the leaders of the people are gathered. That's a statement. All the tribes of Israel together. So that's kind of odd, a statement by itself. But other translations have, and it says, and there was a king in Yeshurun when the heads of the people were gathered and all the tribes of Israel together. Now, we're looking at the time of them entering into the promised land. We say, well, yeah, of course, they're all together there. But what if it's referring to a king of Israel or a king who was there and saying, now you gather together, now we're going to hear the blessings of what God has said for each one of those tribes. It can be translated one way or the other. The very first one is really odd. It's about Reuben. Or Reuven. Some of your translations, and it says, let Reuben live and not die. Let his be few. It's a really odd statement, isn't it? It's kind of unclear completely in the English language. Another one translates, let Reuben live and not die in that his men become few in number. So this is a blessing that Reuben will not perish. It's a blessing that Reuben will still be there. He will not be in huge numbers. He will not be a lot of people. It's a little bit. Another translation, let Reuben live and die not, even though his number grows few. Some of your English translations put that in there, which is not in Hebrew. And they say, let Reuben live and die not, nor let his men be few. That word nor has been added to a lot of your English translations. It's not there in English. I mean in Hebrew. So we're talking about a blessing. The blessing that Reuben will have is they will not perish. The blessing that God said, you will not perish. Even though you are not many, you will not perish. You're aiming for a great blessing. You're going to have life. You're going to live, Reuben. You're going to live, Reuben. You're not going to die. That's kind of a really powerful promise. That's a blessing. Now, we don't really look at this as a really great blessing, but yet, why not? Remember what Reuben himself did? Well, he did something he should never have done. And something was taken away from him. The firstborn birthright was removed from him. And he no longer had the numbers that he once used to have. Now, we're going down here to Judah. I find this very interesting. Now, read what it says for a moment. I'm just doing the phrases. A phrase, okay? And this he said of Judah, hear, Yahuwah, the voice of Judah. Who's he talking to? Talking to God. Who's talking to God? The next statement is very, very fascinating. And bring him to his people. What an odd statement. You mean Judah wasn't with his people? What? So I'm sorry, what? No, not this sentence, no. What did Judah do in his real life? He separated himself from all of Israel. You remember that? Now, there's a promise in that book that they will come back. And so here is a blessing that the Jewish people will have. That he, hear, O Yahweh, the voice of Jehudah, and bring him to his people. Let his hands be sufficient for him when he goes to war. Fight for him. So we're looking at the nation of Israel today. Land of Jews, a lot of them. And it says, let his hand be sufficient for him. don't need to bring in the United States of America to back up and protect them. What you need is that God, hear, Yahuwah, the voice of Judah, they're crying out. And that may you, Yahuwah, be a help against his enemies. Trust in God. Don't trust in anything else. Trust in God. And that was this the blessing of Judah, that God's going to bring them back and be connected with his people again, to all the house of Israel. And many of you know it's a hard thing for them to even think about that. It's unthinkable for them, but not with God. Then Levi, your Turim and your Urim with your Holy One. Now, what does Turim mean? Do you know what that is? No, the word. It literally comes from the Hebrew phrase, your integrity. Your integrity and your lights. That's what room is a plural word for lights. Let your integrity and your lights be with your Holy One. Now, who is the Holy One of Levi? The high priest. Now we're aiming at this a little closer, aren't we? It was a great blessing that he says about these Levites, and what did they do? We know they also did, he says now, verse 9 looks really odd. And Yahuwah, who Yahuwah says in his said of his father and mother, that is Levi's father and mother, I have not seen them. Doesn't mean he didn't see them. He means, I did not pick them. He didn't, did he? In fact, he says, nor did he acknowledge his brothers. Didn't pick them either. He didn't pick Moses, did he? He picked Levi to become deemed holy unto God. A picture of the Holy One of Israel. Remember, the high priest, he had to wear a turban and it said, holy unto the Lord, the Holy One of the Lord, of the Lord. And he said, with whom you, Yahuwah, contended at the waters of Meribah. He wasn't contended against them, but with them. And he says, and keep on going. You have a question?
Back you up here. I was a little bit confused here. The Thurman you said is integrity. Is that
integrity? Yeah. Or what we call righteousness.
Okay. And
what is right? If you are a very right man, decent man, human man, you got to. That's what it boils down to.
In earning.
Yeah.
Light.
Dream. And the Urim means the plurality for light. Aura is a singular word for light. You've heard the word aura. Someone has an aura about them, a light about them. In the very beginning, God brought forth aura. Let there be order. Let there be light. That's where that word comes from. Okay? He was, by the way, because you missed out a lot of things. When the high priest had to enter into the Holy of Holies once a year, he had to wear a very special outfit. And this special outfit had a placard, like a breastplate, and it had all the names of all the 12 tribes, and there was a little pocket of the 9x9, the handspan pocket, which he put in there, the Turim and the Urim, as he went into the Holy of Holies. So, integrity and righteousness and light. It's supposed to represent, because it's with all 12 tribes, will be pictured before God. God will look at them as having integrity, honesty, just, upright, and decent. And Levi here was the one who was supposed to teach them that. God called them out, and for they have observed your, Elohim, word, and your, Elohim, commandment. So this is what they did. What are some of the famous men, not maybe famous men, when there was a great thing that happened during time of Moses' life, And there was a great plague that came. God was so mad. And he set out a death pen. Who went out there in the midst of death to save them from dying? It was Aaron. Aaron took the incense, lit it, and ran right into death. The plague was killing people. He stopped the death. Amazing of it by itself. So that's why he is given this much. He said, verse 10, you shall teach Jacob your judgments, and Israel your Torah. You shall put incense before you, Yahuwah, and a whole burnt sacrifice on your Yahuwah altar. That's what they'll do. That's what their job. Is that a blessing or is it a curse? See, he blessed this tribe with keep and serving God directly. Now, Judah, he's going to bless them by bringing them back into his people. He is going to do this. So we're seeing it's the blessings of what God is going to do. When is he going to do them? When he so chooses to do so. Does that make sense to you? Now Benjamin, he says, I love it, and he will dwell safely by him. In other words, Benjamin will be safe. He actually says that he shall be on Yahuwah's shoulders. Benjamin will be carried by God himself. Now Joseph, what do we know about that? Blessed of Yahuwah is his land. Now, when they have not yet entered into the promised land, have they? No way. They're not even there yet. But when they entered in, what happened? The land that they possessed was blessed. They provided tremendous amount of food for the rest of the house of Israel. In one way, it's like California supplying most of the world's the nation's vegetables, and other states supplying the most fruit or whatever it is. You know, or Texas maybe supplying. Well, I don't know whatever it is, but you know, each one of them is a blessing. Each one of God a blessing. Now God blessed them. They didn't become blessed because they're good. They became blessed because God blessed them. Let's continue on down there. You shall be blessed with the fruit of the sun and the freshness of the produce of the month. Every month you'll have abundance. And the better things of the ancient mountains will come down and pour in things. And the precious, drop down to verse 17. His glory. Oh, what? Is a firstborn bull. What does that mean? Is a bull a good thing to have? Without a bull, you don't have any else. You don't have steers. You have nothing. So the bull is hard working. It's more like an ox than we think of a bull, like a cow and a bull. It's more like an ox. What does an ox do? They carry loads. No, I mean not loads. They carry the plow. They pull. They work. They open up the soil so something can be. He's like that. He's the one that the bull, or like a bull ox, we say, a male ox who's digging down and does his job. Okay? And his horns as a wild ox. In other words, it's not tamed. It just does its job. Together with them, he shall push the peoples to the ends of the earth. And here's this word again. It says 10,000. And they are abundance in number, Ephraim, and their abundance in number of Manasseh. So the two largest tribes would be Ephraim and Manasseh. They'll have the largest number of peoples. That's what it says. And I feel real strong, it's my own personal opinion, that by the time the Messiah comes, we will see that these two, Ephraim and Manasseh, will outnumber the total number of the tribes of Israel. Because they will be the ones who are producing the crops, the fruit. They will be doing the work like an ox. You know what happens? You put an ox in a barn. The ground doesn't work. It stops. It's full of weeds. Everything else takes over the place, you know? And everything is destroyed. You know, I think the proverb says, you know, if there's a clean barn or a clean stall, there's something missing there. The ox has got to go out there and, you know, make a mess. You know, it doesn't mean that, that's where the ox is going to live. He's going to live in a barn, and he's going to do any job. He has to do his other job. And you have to clean up his other job. So, you know, if it's too clean, you're keeping him out of that barn, and he might as well not have one. Zebulun. I find this very fascinating about Zebulun and Issachar. Rejoice, Zebulun, in your going out, when you go forth. During the time of the Messiah, there are two tribes, and one of them is listed here. And the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, by the way of the sea beyond Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles. The people who sat in Hoshech have been given a great light. And upon those who sit in the regions and shadow of death, light has dawned. That's in Matthew 4, 15 and 16. So rejoice, Zebulun, in your going out. You no longer be going and living in Hoshech and in death. And same thing with Issachar. Next verse. What is unique about these two peoples, these two tribes? What is the blessing that they have been given? What is the blessing they give to other people? What is it? Next verse. They shall offer what? Sacrifices of what? Righteousness. Rejoice when you go out. You will offer sacrifices of righteousness, uprightness, decency. Where do you learn uprightness? Where do you learn decency? What do you know is right and good and just? From the Torah. These people will be dedicated in the Torah and walking in it and living in it and providing the teachings, or providing the life, I should say, of the sacrifices that they have learned. Then, of course, Gad, who will be enlarged, become larger than they were before. It's a little hard to understand this part. Who provided the first for himself. Why? Because a lawgiver's portion was reserved there. What's Gad known for? Troops. Okay? Now, it says he provides the first for himself. That sounds like it's a very selfish thing, doesn't it? Let me ask you a question. If you get to an automobile accident and there are two people in it with you, what are you going to do first? You going to what? Yeah, you can move. You look at yourself first, because if you're broken body and burning up, you can't do it. If you can get yourself out of there, then you can get the other person out of there still alive. When you go to the airplane, what do they tell you when you drop down oxygen? You, your children come first? No, you come first. Because if your children, you take them first, you're dead. And the children have no mom or dad. That's why. So it's not that they provide themselves first. They think of themselves first. They also, they do take care of themselves first. They don't depend upon other people. And Dan is kind of self-explanatory. He's a lion's whip. Going to do some damage. And he leaves from Bashan, which comes from Jordan area. Now Naphtali, it says, now Naphtali sanctified with favor, full of blessings of Yahuwah, you'll possess the west and the south. Is that a blessing from God, or is that just something that Moses came up with? When God's name is used so often here, you get the picture, okay, this is really what God is saying. This is the blessings I have given to each and every one of these individual tribes. This is how I look at them. They are my people. What did he say in the very beginning? What did he say in the very beginning? These are my people. They are my saints. And they have received my word. They have received my word. Who else received the word? Remember in the very beginning? Where did they receive it at? Sinai and a seer and a Mount Paran. That's where they received it. Who else received it? No one else. Just them. Now let's go on. We're almost finished here. And Asher, the most blessed of sons, let him be favored by his brothers. And let him dip his foot in oil. That's kind of like a real simple thing. Not too hard to understand. He's going to have faith. People are going to like him. The rest of the tribe is going to like him. They're going to be like a favorite kid. Favorite brother. put it in different words there. And he says, your feet will be like iron and bronze. All days will be your strength. And your days will be long and they'll be strong. Now, 26. That's the end of the blessings of the tribes. Now comes forth this statement again. We talked about that earlier, right? No one like Elohim of Yeshurun. No one like Elohim of the upright ones. It's an interesting phrase, isn't it? What are we talking about here? Does it mean there's no one like Elohim to those who are upright? Or is it saying that Elohim is the upright one? Let's continue on. Who, that is Elohim, rides the heavens to help you, and his excellency on the clouds. During the time of Moses, what was the cloud? His excellency of the cloud. What did the cloud do? Sorry, what? Save them, cover them. What else? I mean, this is a big word here, okay? Or big explanation here about the cloud, you know, what color was the cloud? Dark. Dark cloud. How do you know that? Okay. When Solomon dedicated the temple, he said, you live in the dark cloud. Now, why is it God living in the light cloud or the white cloud? Why a dark one? What happened when he entered into the temple? There wasn't room for them to be there anymore. They had to leave. The whole big building disappeared. Everybody had to leave because he took it over. Pretty big cloud. Freedom on the left because they couldn't see anything. It was dark. They had to get out. They couldn't see where they're going. It was dark. That seems strange, right? And he said now, verse 30, and the eternal Elohim is your refuge. Who's he talking to? To the tribes or to all of Israel? We'll see here in this breaking up. In verse 26, it's now is the beginning of another blessing for all of the house of Israel at one time. Israel, verse 28, shall dwell in safety. And Jacob, the foundations of Jacob, the fountain of Jacob alone. A land of grain and new wine, his heavens shall also drop dew. Who's going to drop the dew? God, the refuge. God, who is with the upright ones. Verse 29. Happy are you, O Israel. You, who is like you, a people saved by Yahuwah. Shield of your help. The sword of your majesty. Your enemies shall not submit. Only your enemies shall submit to you, and you shall tread down their high places. How can they do that? You remember in the previous chapter? And there it said, talking to Israel, how can you, one person, make 1,000 people flee? How can 2 or 3 make 10,000 multiple flee? It only happens if their Elohim, the enemy, sold them. To whom? Into your hands to be slaughtered. So here, we're seeing that God said, which we sometimes in our own world, you know, in our own country, when we know trouble is going to come, and sometimes it's going to really be hard for us to have confidence that God really is the one. That he is the one that will shred, he will fight the sword. He will do the damage. He will do that part. But not because we deserve it. It's because of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. A promise. Now, many of you probably are afraid of what's going to happen in the future. A few more months from now or a few more years from now, you won't know if you even have a house to live in because things are rapidly moving toward our country being taken over, should we say, not by ourselves, but by an outside enemy. When God gives us a blessing and we don't recognize it, what does he do? He takes it back. And then we say, oh my, what did I have trust in? What did I have confidence in? I mean, the old 1611 word for worship has been updated to modern times of, we worship you. Or we worship song and dance. We worship this. And we think that when it says in Revelations, they worship the devil, it's like, what is this kind of religious thing? No. That old word means the one or what you will respond to and answer to. We talked about that last week, right? Let's give an example, okay? Let's say you are a workaholic and you depend, your life is bent upon work, 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 work. And you sacrifice everything for the work's sake, the sake of work. Who are you now obeying? You're obeying work. You are worshiping work. We use an example of a car. Very, very costly. And people will sacrifice all everything to get this one car they want. They will sacrifice everything. And what becomes, who are they responding to? Who are they acting on to? Yes.
Kind of reminds me when I was about 8 or 9 years old when Princess Diana and Prince Charles got married.
Oh, yeah.
My grandmother actually let me stay up at like 1 a.m. or something and watch this. I don't know why she let me do that. But anyway. I remember listening to, you know, I'd never heard an Anglican service before, an Anglican wedding. And so one of the parts of the vows back and forth between the husband and wife is supposed to be with my body I thee worship. And I didn't really understand what that meant at the time. I was only like 8 or 9 years old. But, you know, it's what you give your body to.
To.
You know, you give your mind and your body. When you say that in your wedding vow, you're giving this to this person.
Yeah.
So, like what you're saying is that worship isn't just something we do with a performance and a show and this kind of thing. It's what you give yourself over to. And if you give yourself over to, you know, the pride of life and the lust of the flesh and this kind of thing, it's going to show.
Yeah.
It's going to show eventually.
And look how many, when rock and roll started coming along, you know, there's a very famous guy. His name was Elvis. You remember him? All right. And they actually worshipped the man. What? How? They would do anything and everything they can to go to his show. And whatever he did, they loved no matter what. Now, did they mean they embraced him and that he's the salvation? They're going to deliver them? No, 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 no. They became worshipers, or they became dependent upon, I'm sorry, the next Elvis song. The next... But you understand what I'm saying. If people do that. Okay, let's go to the 24th chapter. It's not too very hard. It's pretty easy to understand. I only want to make one comment. Verse 4. Now, Moses could not have written this chapter. It's impossible. And the way the grammar had been written, you know it's written by somebody much farther on down the history of Israel. And Moses and Yahuwah said to him, Moses, verse 34, this is the land which I swore to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, I will give it to you, to your descendants. The last thing, which I thought was very fascinating. I mean, if you were on a mountain far east of the other side of Jordan, and he said, how could you see what you could see? Well, he says, I have caused you to see with your eyes. He must have improved his eyesight. Really super sharp. He saw all the way to the ocean. He saw all the way up to where Dan was to be placed, even though historically Dan was supposed to have been prophesied to be someplace else. The writer here said the tribe of Dan, they were the farthest north tribe. They weren't supposed to be in the first place, but they couldn't fight where they're supposed to win, so they went up way up north. So this is written well after Moses. And he's able to see south, way south, in the valley of Jericho, way south, to see the palm, city of palm. Jericho, by the way, is called city of palm. That's where Jericho means. If you didn't know it, it means the palm city with a lot of palms. And so God gave him eyes to be able to see. I thought about Abraham when Lot took the best land, which was at that point in time very, very wealthy land. in the Sodom and Gomorrah era. And so God says, okay, now I want you to look around. I think God gave him eyes to see as far as he can see. As far as you can see. And he described the distance all the way to what river? Euphrates River. That's over the horizon, please. It's like, you know, in the book of Revelation, he took me in spirit. He lifted me up high enough where I could see what's going on, soared like an eagle. Same thing with Ezekiel. I think he did it more two or three times with Ezekiel. Lifted him up high for him to see everything. Amazing story, amazing thing that you can do that with. God can do that with, I should say. And it's very funny. Verse 6, this is going to step on a lot of people's toes. Most people believe when you die, you immediately go to heaven. And you're with God in spirit, up there in the clouds all day long. Listen, one of the most important men in this book, very last portion of it says, there was no man like Moses to talk face to face with God. Never existed. Not one of them. Not even Adam. And he said, Yahuwah buried him in a valley in the land of Moab, opposite Baal Peor. But no one knows his grave to this day. Would you think he's still in his grave? Yeah, he's still there. He's still there. He's not up in heaven. His grave is still on this earth. Remember what Peter said? It's the Jewish belief. And he had to correct the Jewish belief. Not Christian belief, Jewish belief. And he says, David is not risen. He is dead and buried in this earth. You know, David, wasn't he the one rolling out in heaven all day? Playing harps? No, he's dead. When will he come back alive? And Michael, Jude 1, verse 9 says, and yet Michael, the archangel, and contending with the devil, when he dispute about the body of Moses, dared not to bring him against him, that is the devil, already an accusation, but said, the Lord rebuke you. So we're looking at this life, we're saying in the book of Hebrews, 11th chapter, they are all not received a single blessing that God promised them. Not even Abraham. Not even Moses. None of them received them. They're all still dead. Waiting. Job is waiting. Yes?
So, all the blessings that she's going through on the ground, is this something that's prophetic on the day of the Lord that's to come still?
I believe it will happen. I think it's going to happen during the 1,000-year reign. Hey, we're going to find out who they really are. I'm going to find out, oh, really? Who are you? Okay, I am. And all these blessings, and the blessings they've been given here, or expressly given here, they will still have them or be given to them to its full theory. Because all of Israel, at that point in time, will become saints of the Most High. Not everybody in Israel, all the house of Israel, were saints. And this chapter, the blessing one, is that he loves his people, his saints, the sanctified ones. Now, a sanctified person can make a lot of mistakes in his life. But they're still sanctified by God. When is he going to sanctify them and clean them up? Well, we don't have an answer completely to that one. I'm just out there in the middle. Yes, Bill.
I'm just a visitor, so don't take this wrong. You know, there is an aspect, because it's hard, because Paul does say out of body, present with the Lord.
I have no problem with that one.
Yeah. And so it is weird, because the instant we die, that's the last thing we know until the instant we wake when we're in the presence of the Lord. So we're in presence of the Lord, essentially, instantly.
In that sense.
Yeah. So it's God sees it in another time zone or time difference. Jeff understands these time things, yeah. And but also Moses, I believe that was a bodily, at the Transfiguration, so-called.
Right.
Moses was there, but yet Moses is still dead, yet Moses
yes.
is present with the Lord, yet the resurrection hasn't happened yet. So, you know, when you're outside of the time that we live in, things get weird. So they can both be true, out of present, or out of body, present with the Lord. Time is kind of skewed once we leave this dimension, I think.
It's interesting that he raised up two people. Brought the vision. It was a vision they actually saw. Technically, they saw a vision. Which even Ezekiel saw visions. Jacob saw visions. Joseph saw visions. So visions are not necessarily unusual with God. The only one that was unusual with God is that only Moses he spoke face to face with. He said, I'll speak to others in dreams or in visions. Now, when we talk about that, and I've talked about this before, I'll repeat myself again. Every time you see written within the Torah or in the prophets where someone saw a vision, it's very precise. Where someone had a dream, it's very precise. When someone of modern day says, well, I had a dream, really? What was it about? They stammered and snabbered, they do this, they think, well, it means this, maybe they don't know that, they saw that, but it didn't mean that, didn't mean this, didn't mean that. They don't know what it means. But in the Bible, precision, word by word, jot by jot, tittle by tittle. So that's implanted within the Word of God. Now, I'm only speaking what I understand, okay? That none has arisen into heaven except one, period. And I have to say, when you're out of spirit, God could take any one of us out of spirit to have us see what he wants us to see. But he's not going to take majority of us. He's only going to take certain individuals that he had planned to do this with. He did it with Ezekiel. He did it with John in the book of Revelations. He did it with Paul. And he did it with Isaiah, or whatever it was. That's something different. God moves them from this place for them to see something at a different level, much higher. The word olam has been translated forever. In Hebrew, what that word really means, when you're up over the horizon, now you can see forever. There's a big mountain away, you can't see a single thing. When you rise above the mountain, now you can see forever. That's a phrase in Hebrew. Doesn't mean, yeah, good eyesight. Now you see what God is showing you. Yes, Daniel.
Regarding what Bill was talking about, I frequently run across the same issue. The fact that, yeah, Ezekiel and John both lived at two completely different times, were both brought the same vision and saw one another in it.
Yeah, right.
Which tells you, okay, now, let me finish, please. Now, so if God was able to take two men living hundreds of years apart, a few hundred, I don't know the exact years, but hundreds of years apart from one another, and take them in their own respective lives, the same moment in time, to see one another do things.
Do that.
Then, to me, the moment which God took Moses and he took Elijah back in their times, properly brought them both to meet Messiah at their relative moment in time, and then returned them back. It's kind of a bizarre way of thinking, but as you pointed out, when you die, you're to God's realm, time and dimension don't mean anything.
Right.
So just because you died umpteen thousand years ago, or versus you had died yesterday, you can be taken from any moment and brought back, because both those men had unusual deaths,
yeah,
to say the least.
Right.
And so it's a bizarre thing that God seems to have done, at least in Ezekiel and John, both write about seeing one another in their vision, which how can that possibly be, but yet they write about it. Say, hey, I saw a man, look what he was doing, he's measuring this. Oh, look what he, it's a bizarre thing. But yeah, time and dimension are weird. But to say that, yeah, you die, thus you're in heaven, isn't quite right. But to say you die and you remember nothing, thus next thing you know you are in heaven, is, again, it's a strange way of looking at it. But yeah, when you go past time and space, it's kind of weird.
And very few men saw that vision. How many?
The transfiguration.
The transfiguration. How many of them saw? Peter and his brother, wasn't it? Okay, maybe John was there too. But that was it. And we told them, do not tell anybody about this. Oh, why? Why couldn't they tell their other disciples, their other friends, the ones that they have run around with? How come they couldn't tell their mom, their dad? How come they couldn't tell their best friend? Because they were told not to. And so they didn't. What were they supposed to see? It says why he showed it to them. Do you remember why he showed it to them? This is what the kingdom of God is all about. I'm going to show you what it is all about. So he brought those two men in vision for them to see. It's a horrible word, a transfiguration. You know, even he himself changed from physical into spirit in front of their eyes. Now, all of a sudden, he's back being physical. You know, so what was the purpose of this encounter? Showing those particular men and nobody else. And that's what you think about. Mama didn't know, Daddy didn't know, none of the brothers knew, nobody knew, just those three. He said, don't tell anybody out until it's time, actually.
Sorry to backtrack here, but help me with my confusion here. I think earlier in Deuteronomy, or Exodus, what it was, that Moses asked to see God, and he only showed him his hinder part.
Correct.
So then seeing him face to face, can you clear that up?
Oh, it's a phrase in face to face, okay. It doesn't mean physically face, I'm in your face. That the Hebrew word, if you take it literally, it doesn't make sense. All right? Because it says, the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the water. Oh, really? Does water have a face? Scripturally, yes, it does. Okay, what face is the plurality word? Many things is on your face. Okay? So when he takes his face to face, he's not going to buffalo him. It's a phrase of, I'm going to talk plainly with him and clearly with him. It's not a physical thing. It's a spiritual concept with God. He's talking face to face with Moses, yes. Not literally, but on a spiritual plane. All right? And the Messiah said about you abuse one of these little kids. You better just go build a millstone, put it on your neck and dump it in the river because you don't want to face me. What? Why? Because the angels that look at that child, they see the Creator of heaven face to face. They'll report to him what happened to that little child. Now, since they don't have to wait for, dialing up or getting the right part number and waiting for the ring, they're instant there. The minute that happened, bamble, they're right there in front of the throne telling them what's going on. Now, we can't picture God taking that much time. I can't. He could take a tremendous amount of information faster than anything mankind could ever possibly compute together. How many times do people pray and all of a sudden all things be heard at the same time? Around the world. Oh, well, it's not him. Someone else is doing it for him. No, it's him. It's like nothing is impossible with God. And to my mind, anyway, I could really simple understand why God can take a human being, in a sense, remove their, quote, self out of their physical body and move that physical self, let it stay there, but the person doesn't even know that his spirit, as the book of John, James says, there is a spirit in man. God created spirit in man. What does that mean? That means life, bluntly. And so he pulls life out of somebody for them to see what he wants them to see, not on the flesh and blood level. Always upon the higher level of soar like an eagle and see what I see. Yes.
It's funny, like Bill and Daniel said, it is a confusing issue because in Psalms, in several places, it says there is no thought, there is no planning, there is no machinations in death, your death. And yet, and in Job, which I've got the Hebrew Bible here and I can't find it, but Job says, don't forget to wake me up. Well, if I didn't need to be awakened, if there wasn't a resurrection, if I'm floating around and doing stuff, then I don't need to be reawakened and given life again because I already got kind of spirit life going on. But then I'd have to be thinking if I am alive. The whole thing is kind of peculiar. But we know we have to have the resurrection, and we know nobody's been resurrected except the Messiah.
Otherwise, it's a whole joke. Resurrection is a complete joke.
Including Methuselah.
I mean, you got people who are going to come at his, when he comes, all of a sudden they're being resurrected from the dead. Spirit being into spirit life. Oh, I thought they're up in heaven. Why bring them all the way down to hell again and raise them back up again? It doesn't make sense. I had a brother, and he said, well, this is what we believe. We believe we're up there in heaven, and when he's going to come, he's going to put us all back down on the earth so he can raise us all up again. I said, Tom, that doesn't make sense. He said, of course it doesn't make sense, but that's what we believe. But, you know, you people can believe what you want to believe. When I read the Torah, read the prophets, read what's written in those scriptures, those are probably more solid than anything that you can have. And you know what, like what Daniel used expression about Ezekiel and the book of Revelations, they saw each other at different time sequence in life. Amazing analogy when you see that story being told.